Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Black mothers and their babies are dying at an alarming rate, much more often than those from other ethnic groups. In response, San Joaquin County launched a new campaign to first and foremost listen, with the goal of better understanding inadequate and insensitive medical care and ultimately provide compassionate solutions. Today on Insight, we're going to learn more about the new program, Rally Around Our Sisters. Plus, a powerful virtual art exhibit is premiering this week. We'll preview Unequal Freedoms, Expressions for Social Justice, hosted by the Center on Race, Immigration, and Social Justice at Sac State. But first, we here at CAP Radio are diving deeper into the latest in a year-long series of polls to better understand how people are faring and struggling during the pandemic, and really the challenges that lay ahead. The third COVID-19 Resilience Poll is a project of Valley Vision and CAP Radio in partnership with the Institute for Social Research at Sacramento State. Today, our focus is turning to one of the main takeaways of the surveys, learning loss. Across Sacramento, Placer, Yolo, El Dorado, Sutter, and Yuba counties, 70% of parents who responded to the poll said they were concerned that their kids are falling behind in school. More than 40% said they were extremely or very worried. CAP Radio's News and Features editor Pauline Bartoloni joins us with their firsthand experiences. Pauline, welcome back to Insight. Pauline, I think you're muted.
Hi there, Vicky. Do you hear me? Good to be on the show.
Oh, it's just all the Zoom kinks. Happy to have you, Pauline.
Right.
Well, I'm really interested to learn more about this part of our survey. You talked to a number of parents. What exactly were they concerned about?
Yeah, as you can imagine, the worries of parents are mixed, you know, depending on the grade level or the personality of their kid. Parents were really just concerned about learning gaps that are happening now snowballing and becoming larger learning problems later on. So, you know, for the youngest kids, like kindergartners, parents were really worried about the social piece, about their kids learning how to interact with others, learning how to take authority from their teacher. For the older elementary kids, parents were worried about like fundamental math and reading, writing skills. And for the high schoolers, parents were really worried about college prep and motivation. You know, I also I've heard a lot anecdotally about parents being worried about the mental health of teenagers right now.
And I think we all know, you know, anecdotally, and it's really not a surprise with distance learning, there's going to be some learning loss. But what I love about the fact that you're talking to parents is that, you know, in one instance, you talked to one mother who gave just a really good example of the learning gap she saw in her own fifth grader.
Yeah, that's right. Renee Webster Hawkins, she's a parent of two sons in Sacramento City Unified Schools. One is a high schooler, one is in fifth grade, and she's most worried about the fifth grader. She's been tutoring both her sons every night, kind of sitting down next to them with a whiteboard, going step by step through their homework, you know, repeating certain concepts. And she says, you know, she does that because there's something very palpable that kids are missing in the online format. And, you know, that's not surprising to most parents. She had this really vivid story about realizing how her son was just not grasping dividing fractions until she taught him how she learned how to do it. So this is how she puts her concern about the learning loss among her fifth grader.
I believe that my fifth grader is probably not on grade level in the area of writing, possibly math as well, too, with some skills. In some areas, he's fine. I'm quite sure he'll be fine and ready for sixth grade math. But I do see gaps in some really basic skills. For him, I worry more when he gets into middle school and high school. And teachers do expect all kids to be at grade level. Will any of these gaps sort of come back to rear its head?
Yeah, I mean, she's really hitting home, you know, the unknowns of the long-term effects that this pandemic will have on children and learning. When it comes to grade levels, high schoolers, what did you find out there?
Yeah, I talked to this other mom, Gwenae Bird. She has two teenagers, they're twins and juniors in Sac City schools, and she's just really worried about the college prep piece, that her kids aren't getting the research skills, that they're not writing, you know, term papers, they're not learning how to even apply to to college. And she's worried that they won't be competitive with other kids across the country who've been in school educating this past year. So here's how she puts her concerns.
Based on the amount of work that I see my kids doing or not doing all the time, I know that they're not learning a lot. But also more broadly, the junior year is supposed to be a year where they're supposed to learn a lot of skills related to college. That's when you learn to write a term paper and do your research and writing. It's the times when you're learning how to apply to college or what you need to be ready to do for college. And college admissions, you're learning about that. But as I think about the kind of education that our kids are getting in Sac City Unified compared to not only neighboring districts, but across the country, and if I want my kids to be competitive with other kids who are going to be applying to college next year, they're not going to have the same college readiness, the same academic rigor, the same structure.
You know, in addition to our polling and surveying over the past year, the COVID-19 resilience poll, is there actually more research showing actual evidence that kids are actually, they're really falling behind?
Yeah. I think the evidence is emerging, and I don't think we're going to know in a comprehensive way how much students are falling behind locally or in California in general for a few months at least. But there has been research out of Stanford University that suggests some kids have been falling behind as much as 30% in some subjects. Generally, kids are struggling in math and English, and the earlier grades are most affected. But most importantly, the Stanford research shows that there's an equity gap that's happening. I mean, there was a equity gap happening in learning loss even before the pandemic between kids who are lower income, socioeconomically disadvantaged, and kids who have more support at home. There's already a disparity, and now that's just widening. So the Stanford research shows that, you know, lower income kids right now, English language learners in public schools who are a sizable portion of our students, they're really falling behind more than their peers right now.
Hmm. When you're talking to education leaders who are trying to close that equity gap, and you just really hit home that the pandemic just exacerbated longstanding inequity issues within our communities, what are those education leaders telling you?
Yeah, the Sac City Unified leaders, I talked to them, and it was pretty sobering, honestly, that conversation, because the chief academic officer, Christine Vieta, was like, yeah, a majority of our kids are, 70% of our kids are low income, socioeconomically disadvantaged, and we know that they're struggling to even just log on, to turn in assignments, to engage with their teachers. So if we know that the kids are, struggling to log on, we know that they're struggling with learning. I've heard from teachers as well that they say that the kids who don't have a lot of support at home struggle more than the kids who have, parents who are engaged. I actually visited a youth center in Del Paso Heights for this story. They support a lot of at-risk kids right now. Gina Warren helped co-found this center, Neighborhood Wellness Foundation. And she says, Del Paso Heights is still reeling from the crack epidemic in the 80s and 90s. They've seen a lot of domestic violence in their neighborhood during the pandemic. And she says, a lot of the kids are operating from the negative. So if you're operating from the negative and you are now dealing with distance learning, you're going to have a harder time adjusting. So this is how Gina Warren puts it.
These kids are not like that baseline of getting a bedtime story, and they get rocked to sleep at night and they got a full belly and they get to rest, and then they get up in the morning, having slept 8, 9, 10 hours. That's not happening in here. So now you got kids that are waking up and they're exhausted and they're tired and they don't want to engage. And that is what's so challenging. So the kids are coming and saying, they don't let me in class. They don't really care. I can't get help. I don't understand this.
I mean, you're talking about Gina in Del Paso Heights with her organization. And also we heard from parents. I would imagine teachers would also agree with them and share the same concerns with learning loss.
Yeah, I talked to a third grade teacher in South Sac in the kind of Meadowview area, and she said she's still working with kids on basic math concepts. right now that they would have learned in by winter break of this year. So kids are really behind. But, you know, on the upside, she says that, you know, Sac City kids are going back a couple days a week now for hybrid learning. And she's already noticing kids are catching up and that they're re-engaged. Kids who weren't really logging on this past year, now that they're going in school, they have perfect attendance. So, you know, kids are coming back and they're getting reconnected. So there is some kind of, you know, light on the horizon here.
And when it comes to a school, learning is just one piece of that. It provides so much more for children and their families. You heard from several sources that catching kids up is not the only priority right now. What exactly do they mean?
Yeah, I heard this from various people that, you know, we can't just focus on the academics here. It's been a hard year for everybody, but especially for kids. So in order for kids to be ready to engage academically or catch up, they need to be okay socially and emotionally. So school districts and education leaders statewide are really focused on this, you know, restorative restart, emotional, you know, focusing on play, making sure kids are connecting with each other this summer, investing in summer school programs for project-based learnings. And the chief academic officer at Sac City Unified District, she was big on this too, focusing on the socio-emotional health of students as well as academics. So this is how she frames it.
I think we're going to have to take a learning progression approach to this catching kids up. And I think we're also all going to need, whether we're parents, teachers, whatever role we serve, our language with our students right now is super powerful. If we operate with our children as if we are in a panic to catch them up, and if we're constantly telling them, you've had learning loss, we've got to catch you up. You know, it's hard enough. And this year's been hard enough on families and parents. They've been teaching partners. And, you know, it's just been a hard year. So I feel like we need to understand and take some time to breathe, to care for each other, to allow ourselves some healing space, and to be really cautious and help our kids to know we're confident in them. They can and will do this.
Yeah, I love how she just said we need to take time to understand and take some time to breathe.
Yeah, can't emphasize that enough. And you can hear the emotion and the people's voices that I talk to. People are just really exhausted right now.
Understandably. Cap Radio's news and features editor, Pauline Bartoloni, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Vicky.
Up next, a new San Joaquin County program is working to replace the inadequate and discriminatory medical care Black mothers and their babies face with compassionate solutions. You can join the conversation. Email us at insight@capradio.org or use the Twitter hashtag AskInsight. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Vicky Gonzalez.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Black mothers are nearly three times more likely to die from pregnancy-related causes when compared to other ethnic groups, and their babies die at two times the rate. Those numbers come from San Joaquin County Public Health. The county is launching a new campaign to address inadequate, insensitive, and discriminatory care and find compassionate solutions for expectant mothers and their newborns. The campaign is called Rally Around Our Sisters, because really the reality is a mother's experience during and after pregnancy affects their health and their babies. Rihanna Wyatt, Colleen Sykes-Ray and Tamisha Valverde, they're joining us on Insight to explain how this campaign is creating a healthier community. Welcome to Insight.
Good morning. Thank you.
Rihanna, I'm going to start with you. Can you just kind of explain what Rally Around Our Sisters is in terms of a campaign and why it's necessary in San Joaquin County?
Yeah, so first, thank you for this opportunity to even speak on, you know, Black maternal health and our campaign within San Joaquin County. So the Rally Around Our Sisters campaign is embracing the concept of it takes a village. Really, the community has been involved in this campaign. We have a community advisory board, which is through the Perinatal Equity Initiative. And we, during our brainstorming sessions, really wanted to highlight that no one person can do this alone or one program. And so we talked about and brainstormed on this concept of it takes a village, and we embraced the slogan that was presented to us of rally around our sisters, creating a healthier community for Black moms and babies. This campaign is really a focus on community awareness, community involvement, and how everyone, regardless if you are currently, you know, have a Black, an African American mother in your life, how everyone can come together and really bring change within our community and within San Joaquin County.
And when heading to the campaign's website, I mean, those numbers, I mean, they're not only sobering, they're staggering. Why are Black women and babies dying during pregnancy and childbirth more often?
Yeah, so of course there's contributing factors. There's contributing factors like maybe fewer access or less access to resources. We look at, you know, lack of proper nutrition or just being healthy before you conceive, your preconception health. However, these factors we also see in other ethnic groups. So that's when we have to kind of take a step back and recognize these disparities amongst the Black and African American pregnant and parenting community not only affect those coming from a lower, you know, socioeconomic status or, you know, less education compared to those with higher income or higher education. It affects Black and African American women across the board. So that's when we look at some of the shared factors, and we see racism as a contributing factor, racism when you're out in the community, shopping, eating, working, playing, and also how racism and implicit bias has an effect on the quality of care that you're receiving when it comes to your prenatal care and your postpartum care.
When it comes to Rally Around Our Sisters, how is the campaign going to work to change that outcome?
Yeah, so for the Rally Around Our Sisters, we have three elements to our campaign. First, bringing light or shedding light on that this is an issue affecting the Black and African American pregnant and parenting population. Spreading awareness about the data, right, that Black and African American infants and mothers are dying at 2 to 3 times the rate compared to other ethnic groups, and how we can improve that outcome. How can we change that outcome? Getting family and friends involved to encourage the mothers in your life to speak up for themselves, to advocate for themselves, or just supporting them in whatever it is that they need. The community, ask questions, take the time to listen, provide resources and offer that support. Health professionals, implicit bias is big right now. So really taking those trainings, being culturally sensitive when providing care. Co-parents, partners, support person that the Black and African American mother that you have in her in your life, you know, go with her to appointments, be interested in what it is that she's experiencing, and also just moms themselves, right? It starts with the mother, you know, pregnancy, motherhood starts while you're pregnant. So definitely speaking up if you feel like there's something not right with your body, advocating for yourself and using the resources that you have around you. And then we have different services within San Joaquin County to support our Black mothers and babies with Black Infant Health, which has laid the foundation for the Perinatal Equity Initiative and providing culturally sensitive services to support Black mothers in our lives. And then we also have our Sister Coach program that's also providing one-on-one advocacy support for Black mothers and their babies, as well as our Passport to Fatherhood program, which is providing support to the fathers and partners and co-parents.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're learning about a new San Joaquin County campaign, Rally Around Our Sisters, to improve Black maternal health in San Joaquin County. Colleen, I'm going to turn to you now. You're a sister coach, and Rihanna just briefly touched upon it. Can you explain what that is and why you became one?
Yes. So the Sister Coach program is a unique program that was developed to provide one-on-one support to pregnant and mothers who have just recently given birth. And I have become a Sister Coach because I know the importance of having that support with someone just coming into my home and visiting me and letting me know what the risks are and what I can do to have a better outcome for my health and my child's health.
You mentioned that your personal experience is not unique, as many women of color experience the same obstacles during and after pregnancy. What are you comfortable sharing?
So when I was pregnant, I experienced perinatal depression. I had already had an undiagnosed depression before I became pregnant. And being pregnant, that depression was only exacerbated. And while I was pregnant with my third child, it was very difficult. I had extremely high highs, extremely low lows. I was suicidal. There were many things that I experienced in that pregnancy that impacted my life and my child's life severely. And it wasn't until I had a nurse educator really give me information about what I was experiencing, where I was able to join group therapy and get the help that I needed.
You know, an important piece of this is also advocating for mothers who experience obstacles stemming from trauma, depression. You touched upon that, anxiety and racism. How does this campaign and how do you help advocate for those mothers?
So I help advocate for those mothers by giving them a safe place to talk, to let them know that they're not alone and that their experience is a shared experience. Some mothers, they don't realize that everything that they're going through, another mother is actually experiencing that same thing. And so we give them a safe place to talk, to open up. We share resources with them. We give them a birth plan. We give them information on health and wellness, is able to walk them through any steps that they need help with.
You know, I think a big piece of this is also advocating for your own health, but it's difficult to do that if you're not familiar with the medical system and also if you're not really comfortable with the medical system. Based on your personal and professional experience, what can Black expectant mothers do to advocate for their own health and their child's health?
So what they could do is have a plan in place, making sure that they know what the symptoms are for pregnant-related issues. Gestational diabetes, postpartum depression. Make sure that they implement like a healthy diet, exercise, focus on self-care. Doing these things can give you a better outcome for yourself and for your child. Just being able to know what the signs are and to know, hey, I know that there's something wrong, and to be able to use your voice to speak up.
Tamisha, you are the only African-American lactation consultant in San Joaquin County. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Can you just talk about the importance of culturally competent health providers to the success of pregnancies and births of Black mothers and their babies?
Yes, absolutely. One of the things to know is that when we receive support, education, and help from providers that look like us, there's a different level of trust. There's a different level of being able to receive what it is that we need, and an understanding of those things. There's a cultural understanding. The way that I would engage with a mother is a little bit, an African-American mother is a little bit different than someone from another ethnic group. Just as a lactation consultant, I understand her journey. I understand the things that come along with Black motherhood, being a Black mother myself, having navigated through the healthcare system myself, whether I'm wearing my professional hat or not, the biases that I've dealt with aren't, even though I have education, they are still there. And so being able to speak to that and give them a safe place where they can be educated, supported, and really advocated for. That's the difference.
And you just touched upon this briefly, but you really have a unique perspective navigating the healthcare system as a young mother in San Joaquin County. Can you talk to us a little about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I was born and raised in Stockton, third generation Stocktonian, and I was 17 years old when I got pregnant with my first son. I had a whole lot of different experiences and different emotions that I went through being a pregnant teen, also being African-American woman. I didn't realize then, but I do look back now and know that a lot of the biases and experiences that I had in the healthcare that I, support that I received were related to not only the fact that I was a teen mother, but also that I was a Black parenting individual. So some of the experiences I had in hospital, even during my delivery, I had a physician that was very harsh in my delivery process and caused me to have a lot of anxiety, and really it was a difficult delivery and experience that I learned later on didn't have to be that way. Had I just gotten someone that could speak to me in the way that I could receive, right? If I had gotten someone that would just listen to me, listen to what I was concerned about, and give me that space to be able to have the birth that I knew that I wanted, and I knew that I needed, and I knew that I deserved. So just from my personal experience there, it made me passionate about helping other mothers. I had some support from a community organization, nonprofit organization, Delta Healthcare. They supported me through their WIC program and provided me with education. Some of the pieces that Colleen mentioned about the support that Sister Coach provides with nutrition and just some mentorship. And from that experience, I was able to become the parent that I needed to be for my son, and use that for my second child. And then they hired me to be able to help other women in the same capacity. And so I think that that was really imperative to like who I've become as a lactation consultant and supporter in the community.
Yeah, it really just came full circle for you, and you're paying it forward.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Colleen, I want to ask you, what makes you passionate about the work that you do?
What makes me passionate is just the experience that I had with all three of my children. My third child, he did pass away, and it was the depression and not having the support that I needed, or the language that I needed to align with what I was feeling. It makes me passionate to not have another mother go through what I went through, not knowing that the emotions and the feelings that I was experiencing was normal, that there was a word for it, that there was help for it, that there was possibly medication for it. So every day when I'm doing a Sister Coach, when I'm visiting with mothers inside their homes and talking to them with their babies, I let them know, hey, you're not alone. These things that you're feeling, that you're going through right now, it's okay to have those emotions, and it's okay to, you know, ask for help, to talk about it, and to really, not shy away from using your voice. Everything is not in your head. Everything is going to be okay. And I'm going to be there, and all the advocates and everyone who works with me at the Whole Life Center is going to be able to walk you through the process of the pregnancy and even after your child is here.
When you're connecting with expectant mothers, what moments still stick with you, that resonate with you?
The moments that resonate with me the most, I recently, attended a listening session with other mothers and some of the mothers that participate in our program. And it was very emotional for me because so many mothers share the same experience that I share. They go through the depression, by themselves, and they go through the emotions, the highs and the lows by themselves, and not realizing that, hey, I was there. I experienced that same thing. And so when I talk to moms, what stick with me the most is being able to, you know, share with them, no, I experienced the same thing that you experienced, and I'm okay. My child is okay. We're doing great. I have the tools to, you know, get through it. We have a wonderful support group that, you know, helps them with everything that they need, from finances to just being able to eat well, to build a space for themselves for self-care that will allow them to be good for themselves and for their child. Mm.
There's so many pieces to this. Tamisha, what more needs to be done in terms of filling those gaps or pieces that are missing to basically stop this alarming trend?
I think we're on the right track, honestly, with this campaign, with the Rally Around Our Sisters campaign. There's just a sense of awareness and understanding of what is really going on. So I think educating ourselves and really being transparent, taking the information, the data that we just shared, and really putting yourself in it and saying, what role do I play? Being transparent about our own biases and our own roles in Black maternal health and the outcomes of for these women and our families, using our platforms to give a voice to these mothers and their families, being able to create safe spaces, like, for example, like Colleen said, the listening center, the listening sessions, maybe providing a space for that as not just in the community, but also in healthcare settings, and being able to have invite organizations like Sister Coach Program or the Fathers Initiative into those spaces to facilitate those kinds of conversations. The other thing that I think is really important and kind of like pulls everything together is understanding that this work cannot be done by just one organization, but really that it's the village, and that it takes all of us and all of our individual roles to be able to really truly address these disparities. One of the things that I wanted to highlight too is legislation. Like, we all have a role in being aware of what's going on in legislation, and some of these programs are funded and projects are funded through the support or through this legislation that supports them. So one of the things I wanted to highlight was SB 464, which was passed back in January 2020, where it talks about dignity in pregnancy. It's a Dignity in Pregnancy Childbirth Act. And so what it does is it actually requires hospitals to engage in implicit bias training, so that their providers and those that are actually providing support to these women in these in hospital settings or birthing settings, to be aware of their biases and to not and to how to combat those things. There is a free online e-learning training that Dr. Rachel Hardiman in Diversity Science actually put together that anyone can access right now and actually take that training. I encourage people to take it at any point, whether you are a practitioner, whether you're someone in the community that you're just working with moms one-on-one in those spaces. You want to be aware of and educated in how you can help to address these disparities. The last thing.
Oh, please go ahead.
No. The other thing I wanted to make aware about some legislation that's coming up too is the Momnibus 2021. It actually is a series of 12 bills that addresses Black maternal health. So it's the Black Maternal Health Omnibus Act of 2021. And so if you don't know about it, I encourage you to do your research, look it up, see how you can support it, and also see what are involved in the 12 bills. Some of the funding that I talked about just a minute ago is actually woven into this bill, and it really combats Black maternal health head on. So
Rihanna Wyatt, Colleen Sykes-Ray, and Tamisha Valverde, they're discussing San Joaquin's new campaign, Rally Around Our Sisters, Creating a Healthier Community for Black Mothers and Their Babies. Thank you all so much for sharing on Insight.
Thank you.
Still ahead, a powerful virtual art exhibit is premiering this week. We're going to preview Unequal Freedoms, Expressions for Social Justice, hosted by the Center on Race, Immigration, and Social Justice at Sac State. You can join the conversation, too. Email us at insight@capradio.org or use the Twitter hashtag AskInsight. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Last year, a call went out to Sacramento-based artists requesting a vision for a society where life is secure for all and opportunities are equal. The submissions were striking, spanning all creative mediums. This week, the work of dozens of artists will premiere. The virtual exhibit is called Unequal Freedoms, Expressions for Social Justice. It's hosted by the Center on Race, Immigration, and Social Justice, also known as CRISJ, at Sac State. We got a lot of excited voices to explain the virtual exhibit, which debuts Thursday night. But first, we're going to introduce you to one of the artists, Sac State graduate Jorge Quintana, performing The Poem Where My People Never Suffer. And just we're going to play the poem in its entirety.
My story begins with a man that looks like my father in a land that has no name. In this moment, he is lifting the sky from the ground. And when he finally manages to lift it over his head, a woman that looks like my mother is born from the space in between. When the sky is finally out of reach, the man that looks like my father looks up towards the heavens and notices that they are too dark to see. So he stretches his hands as high as he can, and the pieces of his body splinter into stars and suns. The woman that looks like my mother looks down at the ground. She feels the land thirsty for life. Not knowing water, she becomes water. Her body explodes into oceans. Her hair unravels into rivers. Her breath becomes the wind, wild with living, pushing the stars across the sky. And a millennia passes this way. And the earth, it spins into fertility until one day, people that look like my uncles and aunts and grandparents are born in the land which we call Latin America, which is a name that has never made any sense to me. But in this land, my people grow tall like Amazonian trees. They laugh with the boldness of the sun and weep with the kindness of the moon. And slavery never sails here. Colonization never sails here. Genocide never sails here. Because all there is in this land is my people and the ground they have worked and the sun from where they came. And so it is history. The history of the people that look like my mother and father and uncles and aunts and grandparents that one day migrates to a city that we know as Sacramento, except it's not called Sacramento. Because the Spanish never stole it, and in this city, I am not undocumented. In this city, my father is not undocumented. In this city, there is no police or poverty, and there are no buildings, only starlight dripping from the sky, and there is no crime, only abundance, and there isn't any money, only love. Only gratitude, only poetry in the form of summer breezes, only hands that don't become weapons, only mouths that don't become bullets, only bodies that grow tall like trees, rooted in stillness, watered by rainfall, fed by sunlight, only bodies that never grow cold, that never grow hungry, that never grow tired of living in this world that was made by their breath in this city. There is only my people and a history that can never be erased.
That is Sac State graduate Jorge Quintana performing The Poem Where My People Never Suffer. All right, I'm going to bring in artist and educator Christy Frields. Christy, thank you for joining Insight.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Well, Christy, you played an instrumental role in curating this exhibition. Why title it Unequal Freedoms, Expressions for Social Justice?
Well, we, you know, coming out of the, in 2020, a summer of protests against racial justice, growing income inequality, the pandemic, there were so many issues, right, to address. And so, you know, we wanted to address that, but also to invite a vision of a more just, free, and equal future.
Julius Austin, we have a handful of very important people part of this virtual art exhibition. Julius, you're with Sacramento Promise Zone. That improves the quality of life of individuals in some of Sacramento's most vulnerable areas. You also were part of the selection committee. There were 90 total submissions. 34 were ultimately selected. Tell us about the art and the artists, because it really spans multiple mediums.
Well, we really wanted to make sure that the art was inclusive and diverse. And so we wanted to make sure that the art spanned across all mediums. So there are spoken word, there's written word, there's dance, there's photography, there's painting and mixed media. And so the art is diverse, but the art came from diverse from diversity and diverse groups of people. And so the diversity spans ethnicities, ages, there is students, there's even faculty from Sac State, and there is both emerging artists and also professional artists. And so we wanted to make sure that the art represented the full complexity of diversity in Sacramento. Hmm.
Dr. Luis Chavez, I'm going to turn to you now. You're an ethnomusicologist at Sac State. I hear that you offered artists awards as tokens of appreciation for their work. Can you tell us more about that and where the money came from?
Yeah, thank you for having us, Vicky. So our project initially started off with a very small pot of money because as artists building this project, we were keenly aware of the struggling artists in Sacramento and how COVID has impacted many of those struggling already initially on the margins, and now COVID has just exacerbated many of those conditions. And so we are awarding $500 for each solo project and $1,000 for each group submission. And these awards are not intended as compensation, but just as a sign of gratitude for how grateful we are in building this project as fellow collaborators, as we see ourselves with each submission. And the financial support comes from various organizations. So for example, resources from the University at Sac State, Chris J., the Associated Students Incorporated, the College of Social Sciences and Interdisciplinary Studies, the Sacramento Region Community Foundation, Next Gen Policy, the Office of Arts and Culture for the City of Sacramento, and council members Guerra and Harris, and many private donors. And we also sought out resources within our community in building this coalition of a community-based approach. And so the Sacramento Promise Zone, Teatro Nahual, IMBA, and Hacker Lab were very much a part of this project.
I think that just pretty much exemplifies that it takes a village, correct?
Indeed.
Well, Bernard Brown, I'm turning to you now. You're the assistant professor of dance. You know, what overall, what do you hope people take away from the exhibition, Unequal Freedoms, Expressions for Social Justice?
Well, hi. I think it's important for us to seat and couch arts as the best of humanity. And so if that is our cause and our theme, then I want people to take away a vision of the future. I want people to take away an understanding of a lived experience that may go beyond the written word, abstract, as we can do in the academy, but the lived experience of people on the ground and how we can support them, what we can do about these injustices, and how the arts can offer a creative and vibrant vision of the future.
What surprised you most about working together for nearly 9 months and seeing this come to fruition?
Oh, well, I was one of the original members of this group. It was such a small group pre-pandemic. There were maybe six of us. And once we got around revisioning what this project could be and who we could include, the most exciting thing was the broad base of folks that were interested and excited about building this exhibit, from the upper administration in the city to people across town, the Poor People's Campaign here in Sacramento, all of our community partners, schools, and people from the far reaches of the region. So what was really exciting to me was that so many people were excited and wanted to be involved in very selfless ways. And so it restores a bit of faith during these tumultuous times that we all have our greatest good in mind and in our hearts.
Julius, what I find interesting is that the listening audience can also get connected and join in and share their experiences and strengths, correct?
Certainly. This is an opportunity for us to amplify both the voices and the art of those who are far too often muted or ignored by systemic and non-systemic racism, discrimination, and oppression. And so we want people to tap in. We want people to enjoy the art. We want people to be inspired by the art so that they can use their voices and amplify their voices to create a better, just and equitable future for us all.
You know, finally, Christy, turning to you, we started off with you, so it's come in full circle. In the last minute or so that we have, you know, you put the call out to artists, setting the wheels in motion. Any final thoughts about, you know, why this was so important during the pandemic?
Well, I think, you know, given that we were so isolated, you know, individually and as a community, and I felt, you know, coming together through a creative process, coming together to collaborate, to make a bridge from the university, from our, you know, our homes, out into the community, and just giving a platform for the urgency, right, of the times. Art is a tool is a powerful tool, right? And it can affect change. And I think that's sort of my hope for this.
Well, thank you all so much for joining us. Unequal Freedoms, Expressions for Social Justice is hosted by the Center on Race, Immigration, and Social Justice at Sac State. The virtual art exhibition premieres Thursday at 7 p.m. Thank you all again for joining us. And that is it for Insight today. You can learn more about all of our guests at capradio.org/insight. I'm Vicky Gonzalez. We're going to be back at it tomorrow. But before we leave you, we're going to leave you with Sac State graduate and artist Oki Jr. performing Elmhurst.
I go by the name of Oki Jr. Born and raised in East Oakland, California. Let me tell y'all a little bit about myself. Yeah, I used to have hoop dreams when I lived on 98th. Elmhurst Middle School, I had the low-cut fade, saving my lunch money for the new pair of J's. I just wanted something fresh, my style needed a change. Look, I stood out, couldn't help it, I wasn't regular. My grades didn't reflect my true intelligence. My attitude didn't reflect my
my true character. Man, I was broke deep inside, I didn't care enough. Teacher speaking me while I'm daydreaming, head down in the back of the class. Contemplated dropping out so many times, but I promised my dad. Got accepted into college, same week that he passed. I've been dealing with emotions, trying to fight this feeling. Had to get up off my, told myself, let's get it. Execute, be consistent, create your lane, it's your vision. Don't let them dictate your feelings, a black man on a mission. My skin black, my head dreaded, got tattoos. They gon' judge me by my looks before my attitude. My daddy's slaving, working minimum wage. The life of an immigrant, trying to find his way. In a world with people judging, labeling us thugs. We didn't ask for this life, it was given to us. Man, said, we didn't ask for this life, it was given to us. We gotta keep that positivity, man. I know it's a lot of madness going on in the world, but it's all about pushing that positivity and making sure we just bring the best out of ourselves.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.